and welcome to Ride the Omnibus. I'm your host, Ariel Baska, and today I'm speaking with director Andrew Cumming about his new film, The Neanderthal Horror, Out of Darkness.
I am delighted to talk to you about your film, The Origin, because that was a fabulous time last night. I just want to quickly recognize it's unusual to choose a prehistoric setting for sure, and to come up with the inspiration sources that you had for it. I found that a particularly interesting story, and I wonder if you'd like to share that with
Sure. It started for me, I was in film school in the UK, and I saw a documentary about the history of humans, of the species, on the BBC. And there was the first episode was about early modern humans coming out of West Africa, migrating into Europe, and sort of encountering Neanderthals for the first time. And I was sort of hit just by that moment. And that was that changing of the guard. Because Neanderthals had been, you know, the apex predator on the planet for 300,000 years. And then we came along, and within about 15,000 years, they were all gone. So that was a sliding doors moment for us as a species. And I was just really, that opened up questions in my head about what happened, what does it say about us? Then I read William Golding's follow-up to Lord of the Flies, The Inheritors, which was also about a family of Neanderthals returning to their summer hunting grounds and encountering this strange new species that was like them but otherwise. And I put that book down and I just had this epiphany about us, again, Homo sapiens as a species and what we're capable of, what we can do to each other, what we do to things we don't understand, that we're fearful of, etc. So those were ringing around my brain when I had a meeting with Oliver Kassman, the producer. And this was sometime summer 2015, so a while ago. And he said, you know, we had this hour-long chat, and then at the end of the meeting he said, I've got an idea about, I want to do a monster movie where the monster isn't really a monster. I mean, I'm giving you spoilers. There's spoilers here, obviously, but I want to do something where the monster isn't really a monster. I've got these two time periods in mind, and one was Homo sapiens and Neanderthals encountering each other for the first time. And that was it. I said, you've just described the movie that I want to make one day. I didn't think it would be my debut, but he said, well, why don't we just try it as a debut? So that was it. We just got to work from there.
Yeah. And it's wonderful, too, because there's so much richness to this film because of the constructed language as well. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of conlangs. I was a Latin teacher for 15 years, so I have spent my life immersed in ancient languages. And so it's really fascinating to me how you integrate so many aspects of the language into the richness of the film. And it's really fascinating how your actors really took up that challenge and really were able to carry into character so much of the language as well.
Yeah, it was really important from the get-go, because when we pitched the film, you know, the elevator pitch, prehistoric Stone Age horror, the first question everyone asks is, well, can they talk? And we were like, yeah, of course they're going to talk. Like, I had no interest in doing the mute version of this movie. And the reason for that is I didn't want the audience to watch the screen and see these characters and look at them as if they were at the Natural History Museum. Mm-hmm. And they were looking at waxworks figures behind a glass screen. You needed to see yourself in them. You needed something to invest in. And see that they aren't that different from us and we are not that different from them. So once we'd agreed, okay, they're going to speak, it was really a case of, as I said last night in the Q&A, I lost my nerve at one point and thought we should do it in English because I was worried. It was my debut. I was already doing something that was quite out there. And should I go all the way and possibly alienate swathes of audience? And then at some point I just felt, no, don't be lazy. Really go for it and make it an immersive, visceral experience. And I think it helped the actors. I think because, you know, imagine you're an actor and it's COVID and you're given a job and it's like, okay, you need to leave your home, your family, with some of the actors, leave your children, come to Scotland for 6 weeks, nobody comes in, nobody goes out. You're gonna put on furs every day. We're gonna traipse up mountains, and also you've got to speak this language. But I think once they all got into it and everyone committed so bravely to the concept, I think it really helped them forget about themselves,
mm-hmm.
and everybody just really bought into the experience. And as a director watching the monitor, I'm not thinking about, oh, well, that syllable wasn't right, or you're not getting into the minutiae of the English language, which can sometimes happen. You're just, I'm watching it and just saying, do I believe it? Do I believe the intent behind the line? And that's a nice place to be.
Yeah. And it is like a second language immersion experience, where I was also thinking it has particular benefits if you're working with a multinational cast, mm-hmm. as well, where you don't have to worry about a specific line reading not matching exactly in certain ways. And it seems such a beautifully blended way to kind of create community through language.
Yeah, exactly. Because Arnold, who plays Odal, he comes from Berlin. Luna, who plays Heron, the young boy, she comes from Switzerland. So yeah, you're right. It just was a great leveling ground for everybody. And, you know, and everyone else comes from different parts of the UK, so they have different accents. But it was a great leveler. And, you know, we worked really hard as well with our casting director, Heather, to make sure that the cast felt cohesive in terms of their look as well. So we were really, we wanted to cast mixed race or mixed heritage actors, because again, you're just trying to find a cohesion across not only the language, but also how they look. You need to believe these people have traveled together for generations.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And then also the way that the othering happens within the film, making sure that there is this sense of cohesion versus the other, mm-hmm. too. So
yeah, well, that feeds into the inspiration as well. You know, as well as, you know, watching documentaries and reading books about early modern humans, myself and Oliver and the writer Ruth, you know, we were scared and angry about what was happening to the world in 2015, 2016. I mean, it's not right for me to comment on American politics, because, you know, you guys can do that yourselves quite easily. But, you know, in terms of in the UK, we were dealing with Brexit,
yeah.
and the rise of nationalism there, and the distinct othering that mm-hmm. was happening. And it's happening now, you know, it's still happening now with these so-called culture wars and the war on wokeness. And whenever people in power feel their power is slipping, they will find an enemy.
Oh,
nice. And it's happened throughout history. But it just felt at that time there was a tipping point, both in the US and in the UK and in other parts of Europe as well, just a rise in sort of populism, demagoguery, and it felt like we need to tackle this, but in a way that is still an accessible genre movie, right? Because you need to entertain first and foremost, and then you can slip the vitamins into the ice cream.
Yeah. I'm also going to say one of my absolute favorite lines in the movie comes when a couple of different characters say to Bea the Stray, you are what I or we need you for.
Yes.
And it's almost like in Brexit, that's what we were all saying to the EU. You are.
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating to think about it in those terms specifically. Do you feel like that's a theme that's going to emerge in your work to come?
Good question. I mean, I'm working on a few things now. It's tricky because I'm not. Oh, yeah. Good question. I feel like the characters I've always been drawn to in my short work and even some TV stuff I've done is I'm always looking at people that are morally pretty ambiguous.
Mm-hmm.
All my favourite heroes are usually anti-heroes. And I think I like cinema and stories that just like to be in that grey area. You know, I don't think I've got the chops to make a rom-com where it's all going to be okay in the end. I'm trying to strike that middle ground that the filmmakers that I admire and the filmmakers that I grew up admiring, that they can make accessible movies that bring audiences in, but that they're poking at something, either, you know, an issue that we are tackling now within a social political aspect, or something that's more innate and universal in the human condition. Yeah, I'd be so bold. So it's a tough one. I think I'll need to ask me that question in another 10 years.
All right.
I've got a bigger body of work. We can look back and go, oh, yeah, I can connect the dots. But I feel like, especially when I'm starting a new project, if I think that way too soon, and maybe paint myself into a corner. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I try to try and approach everything fresh. But of course, there will be a through line.
Yeah. There's always a through line. Yes. Like with my podcast, the through line is pop culture meets social justice.
Right.
Of course, I'm going to go for your film.
Because it
seems, even just on the surface, something prehistoric is going to feel that on some level, right? Yeah. I never for a second doubted that this story would be a very universal one, but also one about the unique moment we're living in.
Right.
It's beautiful to see the way that plays out. But in terms of future works, I think it's always fascinating to kind of look at how first works align to perspective. Mm.
Yeah, I think, you know, I just remember that line from Network, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. And I think that's the thing that was driving us, myself, Ruth and Oliver, through the development process is just we've got to tackle this thing head on. But not head on. I mean, we do it in a more, you know, we take a detour around so that, again, that we're not smashing people over the head with it. We'll leave that to Bea. I think it's important. I feel that filmmakers have a responsibility, first of all, to work out who their audience is and cater to that audience, but also to upend and subvert and surprise and cajole the audience. The movies I love are when you're pinned in your seat and you're just given a shake for 90 minutes. And that's the kind of stuff I want to make.
Mm-hmm. You're also feeding bloodthirsty females, and that is very much appreciated.
Yeah.
So.
Well, this is the great thing about bringing Ruth into the project as well, because Oliver and I had this 3-page outline. It was just a skeleton of a thing. And Ruth came on board and we were talking about, you know, humans survive because they're inhumane. Discuss. And she said, yeah, that's all great. And she was really interested as a woman talking about female violence perpetrated upon women and also perpetrated by women. Mm-hmm. And again, I mean, we were speaking about this yesterday in the hallway outside about, I just love the idea of subverting the trope of the final girl, that she's not just like Marilyn Burns in the woods screaming her head off. Actually, she's a focused genocidal maniac by the end of the movie because of how she's been treated, because of how she's been trampled on. So that's the other thing that the origin feeds in, is it's not just about fear of the other, it's also about be wary of the consequences of how we treat our young people, how we treat women, how we other them and, you know, vilify them for whatever reason, because one day it'll come back and bite you in the ass.
That's a wonderful place to leave this. So I want to thank you
so much.
This is wonderful.
Thank you for listening. And thank you for taking a moment right now to reflect with me on the history of the land you are listening on now. Whether you are stuck in traffic or sitting in your office chair, take the time to look up whose traditional lands you are on now and what treaties govern those territories. I record this podcast on the site of land stolen from the Manahoac people. I am grateful to work on this land, and I acknowledge that we need to protect and honor the history of the indigenous people from other tribal nations that have made innumerable contributions around the world. I share this in the hope that my listeners may join me in honoring our past, present, and future. Without this land, this earth, and each other, we are nothing. Before I go, please take 30 seconds now to leave us a 5-star review by clicking on Support the Show in the show notes. We don't want your money, we want your words. A simple RTO rocks my socks expands our reach and helps us keep bringing you great content. And connect with us on Instagram and Twitter, where we are at Omnibus Ride. You can also visit our website, omnibusride.com, where you can go to dive deeper into our content and learn more about the show. A special thank you to our amazing editor, William Dass. We truly couldn't do what we do without him or Danielle. Be well, be safe, and keep in touch.